Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
What's going on? This is Xavier Woods, a.k.a. Austin Creed.
I said give me a hell yeah!
Hey, this is Veda Zane.
Hey, everyone. This is Jeff Cobb.
Hello, WWE Universe in the Philippines. This is Charlotte.
Talent is not sexually transmitted.
Hey, this is TJP, the Phil-Am Flash, and you are listening to Stan, Ro, Chino, and Camos on the Wrestling Podcast.
You're listening to the longest-running weekly episodic Filipino wrestling podcast. This is the Wrestling Podcast.
Yeah, buddy!
Stancy, Raf Camus, and Chino Liao here at Podcast Network Asia.
Stancy, back for the first episode of 2020.
Yeah, the first episode of the decade.
Your first episode of the decade.
My first episode of the decade. I'm not sure if you guys touched on it, but I was out last time because I had too much chemistry over the holidays.
Nasobrahan ka sa Shopaw.
It's another tainted Shopaw incident.
You never learn, do you?
Yeah. Too much food. I was feeling really nauseous and dizzy on the evening of New Year's Day, which was like really rotten. Because it's literally the last holiday or the last of the holidays.
Last of the holidays before
we start. Sama pa ng timpla mo, diba? So,
yeah. Well,
I'm just glad that I'm here. I'm glad that
you're alive and you made it to 2020. All right.
But somebody else isn't. So.
Yeah. Ro isn't here because he's dealing with a very bad migraine right now. So we hope you'll be ready for our next episode.
So next week si Camus wala, the week after ako.
So shifting tayo ganun.
Shifting tayo.
Tangin. Rotating. Hindi. But at the end of the day naman, it's just the holidays are exhausting.
Yeah,
like,
they are.
We just have to tell it na we're recording on a Tuesday, the first Tuesday, working Tuesday of the year.
And oh my God, traffic is back.
Fuck!
Yeah. It's already really horrible. It took us forever and a day to get here, and it was really bad. So if you want to do us a solid and make us feel better, make Ro feel better because he's sick, make us feel better for being stuck in traffic, do us a solid and download PayMaya and sign up using our code WrestlePayMaya. Again, that is WRESTLE PayMaya. Use that code, you get 50 pesos, we get 50 pesos, everybody happy.
And if you listen to us in traffic, that makes a big deal too because PayMaya helps you transact and listen to this podcast. You can do both at the same time.
Yeah, yeah.
When you're stuck in Philippine traffic.
Yep.
Because, it's terrible. It's
keep
absolutely
in mind.
Terrible, guys.
Keep it in mind, it is WrestlePayMaya. All right. It's a very special episode of the podcast because we've got a longtime friend of the podcast returning for the first time since 2015. Ryan Songalia, former Rappler sports editor and Ring Magazine writer. I think he's also the editor now of the website.
As
he mentions in the interview, he'll be joining us in just a bit, and we'll be shooting the breeze, talking about a lot of things from how he became pals with Enzo Amore, to him and I hanging out in Brooklyn and getting drunk at like 5:30 p.m. To him having had the initiative to start that wrestling column on Rappler, which Ro wrote.
Did?
Yes. Camus.
Camus, you know this.
I just found out today.
So, but you know this.
No, I always knew this, but then it's just we're divulging it that fast. Okay,
no, he already. It was me, Austin himself, years ago.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, but so you know, we have a lot to talk about with Ryan, which is a whole lot of fun, and we'll get to that in a bit. But right now, we can't bury the lead any further. We have to talk about Wrestle Kingdom 14, that 2-night special, and the two biggest things that came out of that. Number one, Tetsuya Naito is your double gold champion, tama ba?
Yes, double gold.
Yeah, he is Mr. Double Gold. He's got the heavy Q and the Intercontinental Championships. That's number one. And number two, the great Jushin Thunder Liger has officially hung up his boots.
Yeah. Well, okay. When you think about Wrestle Kingdom weekend, it's never just one night. you know, it's always one night plus New Year's Dash.
Right.
This year we had two nights and then New Year's Dash.
So it's more three nights.
It's three full nights of NJ level cards at their absolute peak. So
yeah, Chino and I, we only got to watch day two.
I've seen 90% of day one. Day two, we watched that together.
Together, yeah, the viewing party. Hey, and shout out to everybody who was there at the viewing party over the weekend. You guys came out and you joined us. You made a community out of the Skinny Mike's crowd, and that is something we're going to be grateful for.
We are always grateful for that. And, you know, we look forward to seeing you guys once again when we do this. Very, very, very soon.
Yeah, January 27th at the Royal Rumble viewing party at Skinny Mike's. We're there as early as 5 a.m.
The day after
PWR Mabuhay Ang Wrestling.
Putang
ina. I'll be there for both those things. So
wait, you're sure?
Yeah, for sure.
You're absolutely sure.
I'm writing it in stone.
Uy, maga naman kami magpa-uwi. Yung dismissal ng PWR 6 p.m. diba? So technically, you can have dinner, you can go home, get some sleep, and then make it to Skinny Mike's the next day.
I was gonna say, do you need somewhere to sleep over?
Are you gonna let me sleep over at your place?
I don't have a double bed, but I have a nice single that you will spill over on.
Let's discuss this afterward, when the mics are off.
But okay, let's go back to Wrestle Kingdom.
And how so many things happened. Not the least of which was let's talk about Naito. Being the double gold champion. What does this mean for the man himself and for the Japanese wrestling landscape?
Okay, so let me just. I will be brief. Naito has been on a long, long, long arc. That finally sees him crowned in glory in the, what, how many days ago? 2 days ago now. So that's the first time ever that he has achieved his goals. Because for the longest time, he has been in the big matches. The first time around, he didn't deserve it. The second time around, he lost. And then now you get to the point where the fans adore him, not just love him. He is adored in NJ circles and has been basically the prince that was promised.
Yeah, LIJ wasn't necessarily a face stable when they started out.
No, right? they were not. No, they were not.
They were despised.
but they moved the most merch.
Yeah, right? Exactly. So I think this comes as a realization by NJPW management to in crowning Naito. They came to the realization that maybe this is the guy now. This is the changing of the guards.
Well, it's not so much a changing of the guard there, because Naito has always been in the picture. There's no torch that has to be passed. There's more like, is it his time now? Because he is contemporaries with these guys that we revere, like in Okada and, well, to a lesser extent, the other guys that are that age.
Correct me if I'm wrong here, but if you're going to make a WWE comparison, I think it would be apt to say compare like the big four of New Japan to say the four horsewomen in WWE, in the sense that for so many, for a good long while, Becky Lynch was kind of ignored, and then she finally got her moment to shine and stand tall at WrestleMania 35.
That's actually a very apt comp. If you're going to look at it, because... But with a lot more feelings. Kasi,
I guess because Naito took so much longer.
Not just it took so much longer. He faced so many more setbacks, so many more big losses. Being in the position... Like, imagine the push that Becky Lynch got for... what's this called? Down in NXT. Diba? That was very organic build. Organically build.
All right.
When you get to Naito, none of it started organically. He was one of these... He is the promised one. He is the Stardust genius that people see and should accept as white meat babyface on the level that I would say they tried to make Batista work. On that sort of scale at the very start of Batista's career.
Yeah, but what does it mean for Japanese wrestling to have one guy hold the top two titles? And like the Intercontinental Championship in New Japan is not on the same level as the one that Shinsuke Nakamura holds in WWE. Definitely.
No.
What does it mean that there's this one guy who's got the two top belts?
It's unprecedented, because what you have now is an environment where there's more uncertainty than there has been at any point in NJPW title history, because what you have now is one guy put in the position the way that we've seen it in WWE play out now with Becky Lynch and Seth Rollins in the recent past. Now, this guy is going to have to work doubly hard to defend each belt. But in the case of Tetsuya Naito, what it looks like they're going to do is have him defend both belts simultaneously across a certain stretch of this year.
I think it's interesting the way that Wrestle Kingdom ended, especially on day two. So Naito beats Okada finally after that crazy ass sequence, and then he becomes double champion. And as he's cutting that customary promo by the victor of the main event, in comes Kenta and bum rushes Naito and then sits on him Shibata style, raising both championships, clearly signaling that he's the next in line to challenge Naito.
But the problem was that they already set precedent that the loser's bracket basically of
the winner of the loser's bracket, being Jay White,
was going to get first dibs.
Right.
So both of them share a faction.
Yeah, there's that conundrum, right? Because Jay White is the Bullet Club leader, then you've got Kenta who is their high profile free agent pickup.
Well, let me put it this way. You asked about what this means for the title. That means that booking options wise, Gedo has so much more to play with in terms of stories he can tell.
Yeah, because he's got two guys going after the double champion. He can have both guys challenge for both belts, or one guy challenge for the Intercontinental belt and one guy challenging for the heavy Q.
But that much hasn't been made evident yet. But what it's looking like is that we're going to get a lot of tension down the road that plays in with those dynamics if they decide to go that route. But if they keep it as a more prestigious style, the way that I would say, who the fuck was defending it? The undisputed title that Jericho won, that eventually Triple H had the both.
Yeah, that was Stone Cold and The Rock.
Stone Cold, The Rock, Jericho, and Triple H era, that type of stuff go down. Now, if you beat the one guy, you get both belts. I have a feeling that's the initial route that they're going to go.
See, the way I looked at that ending was, it was really old school the way that they did it. Because they gave you the moment to celebrate the end of the chase where Naito finally raises his hands in glory, and he actually doesn't even get to raise both championships. This is the funny thing. Like, wala siyang Becky Lynch shot where Becky had both belts in her hands.
Daniel Bryan shot. It's more
or the Daniel Bryan shot. Yeah, Naito didn't get this, and like I think he was just about to like end the promo, and he was gonna pick up the belt, and then Kenta attacks him, right? And it was such a good move in the sense that yeah, you gave something to the crowd, enjoy the babyface moment, and then you snatch it away agad-agad, which makes Kenta such a bigger heel because he didn't even let Naito get to celebrate.
I mean, going into the night, Kenta was already a big heel, right? When he was facing Goto for the...
He was undesirable.
Yeah, he was just hated in that match, but he was so... He was so good.
Let me put this into perspective. Now, that speech is sacred. You were waiting for the confetti to hit, right? There's always that imagery in New Japan that when you win something big, G1, main event, like that moment that Okada has had so many times at the Tokyo Dome, there will always be confetti. There will always be that beautiful shot of things falling down. For Kenta to disrupt that, for the guy that people have been clamoring for the better part of 3 years, to win it all. And not get that moment is tantamount to being like the biggest fuck you that you could have given for a guy who has actually earned it in the fans' eyes.
Yeah, Kenta has always been proven to be this great disruptor, especially since he wasn't really an original NJPW guy. He was in Noah. Yeah, he was in Noah. He was all over.
I think he was at some point.
Yeah, but right. He was all over except NJPW, and then he had to take this sojourn to the WWE
NXT.
Right, and it was part of his storyline when he came back to NJPW when he realized that he needed to be this great disruptor in the flow of the talent, where now we see him just be the biggest heel against the biggest face in Naito.
Yeah, funny that you mentioned biggest face, because I was entering the Wrestle Kingdom viewing parties asking questions like, oh, sinong face ngayon, sinong heel ngayon, diba? Like, I remember asking this question during ZSJ versus Sanada, which I enjoyed very much. So going into Okada Naito, sinong babyface, sinong heel? But and then you guys just said they just are, which has been the answer I've been getting about New Japan top characters since like Nakamura was there.
But because it's gotten to the point that booking wise, if you want to delineate how these guys move, like if you want to break it down to how these guys move, how these guys work, you cannot clearly say that any of those top four guys outside of Jay White right now are clearly defined as either, because they switch around, they show shades of gray so often that even Okada, who is top guy, basically, I would put him on the level of Daniel Bryan.
No, the way I see it, and this is me as a casual talking here. When you guys said that they just are after what happened with Kenta disrupting the celebration, I think Naito is a fully fledged babyface. Like you can't deny that he has basically become their top babyface after that, because like everybody had already been rooting for him and everybody was invested in his success, and then for him to get that moment and then to get that celebration just yanked away from him, that's babyface level sympathy right there.
Yeah, I don't think there's a question. I don't think there's a question of Naito being the top babyface in this moment, especially after the attack by Kenta.
Right. So you have that. You have the layer, right, going into Naito. But just to wrap up the point, Camus.
Yeah.
Just to wrap this up before we talk about Liger.
Yeah.
No.
I was asking
if you had something else to add.
At the end of the day, kasi, what Naito has to offer is a fresh champion, a guy who hasn't been given the opportunity to run with it, but who is accepted by the fans and who can carry the company for a stretch.
All right. Now let's talk about Jushin Thunder Liger, who retired over the weekend, and he was given this retirement ceremony at New Year Dash. Really emotional ceremony. You had guys like Tanahashi just crying in
the
audience.
Tanahashi bawled his eyes out, and you had Okada freaking crying as well. Just baby tears. But then when Tana broke, I broke, and it gets to the point, Kasa, that you have to understand that Liger is always puts himself last in things.
Even in the match that he had during day two, where he lost to Hiromu and Dragon Lee, who ironically were in the same tag team, because Dragon Lee was the guy who injured him, right?
Yeah.
But then even in this matchup where he decided to put the talent over, just shows to you what kind of a class act Jushin Thunder Liger is.
And, you know, so much has been said about Liger's influence on the industry, how he revolutionized the junior heavyweight style and innovated stuff that we continue to see today, like the Shooting Star Press, among other things,
among
right?
Other things.
You know, Liger was the Liger Bomb. He's an absolute game changer.
There are so many other small things that he will continue to do.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, go ahead.
He's only retiring as an in-ring performer. He's still, to my knowledge, keeping up with the dojo. He's still going to be running the Japan dojo. He's still going to be doing commentary. He's still going to be involved with the product, just not in an in-ring capacity anymore.
Yeah. No, Jushin Thunder Liger as a game changer in modern-day wrestling is unparalleled. I mean, his look alone is just one of a kind.
It's immortal.
It's immortal and
iconic.
The style that he brings to the ring, it'll be something that people reference many, many years to come.
And like, what's also amazing is how he was such a babyface. Like, he wasn't necessarily a career babyface, but if you look at the career arc, a good chunk of it was with him as a hero. And he gave generations of wrestling fans somebody to look up to. And he inspired so many. He blazed so many trails from guys like TJP to guys like Daniel Bryan, Rey Mysterio. A lot of these cruiserweights that we enjoy today are very much influenced by Jushin Thunder Liger. And it's as somebody who just really grew up on WWE, I kind of feel cheated. Nah, the only WWE exposure he really had was that match with Tyler Breeze at TakeOver.
But that's not his fault.
I mean, of course it's not.
I remember Liger from his early days in WCW.
Ono?
We might be mistaken here, but I remember seeing him in the very early beginnings of the cruiserweight division in WCW, seeing him run around with guys like Juventud Guerrera and a very early Rey Mysterio.
Setting
the precedent of what the cruiserweight division has been known for.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, you know, over 30 years in the business, so many championships all around the world, so many territories and countries and companies that he's worked for, and so much influence.
That's the thing. Because when you mentioned it, that he did that one show for NXT, that was really just because at that point, people were thinking, what is there left for him to do? That's where he reached in his arc. I think there was enough goodwill at the time between NJPW and WWE to be like, hey, you know what? You want to do one show? Come over.
And, you know, they even sent flowers. Like, that's part of Japanese tradition to show appreciation for a legend that's retiring by giving them bouquets of flowers. And there was actually...
Any momentous occasion, really.
Yeah, there was actually a bouquet that came from NXT, WWE, and Kushida.
Mm-hmm. So there. It's a sad day. It's a sad day for wrestling, but it is not the end of Jushin Thunder Liger. It is just the retirement of the character himself.
Yeah, so congratulations on a momentous run for Jushin Thunder Liger and to Tetsuya Naito for finally winning the big ones at Wrestle Kingdom 14 over the weekend.
And if you want to freak out, there's more that I'll talk about at the end of the show just because there's so much fucking good wrestling from Wrestle Kingdom. Don't skip. If you have the time... Go watch both nights. Catch New Year's Dash after you've given it a break, because that's what that it's like. Those two nights are one WrestleMania.
All right. So there you have it. That's our Wrestle Kingdom pit stop, I guess, before we get to our interview. But before Ryan Songalia comes on board, we also have to talk about one thing relating to WWE, and that is the Brock Lesnar appearance.
Brock.
So yeah, so we're recording this hours after Monday Night Raw had aired, and the biggest story coming out of that is Brock Lesnar coming in, and through Paul Heyman, he declared his intention to join the Royal Rumble match. And to come in at number one. Now, he's not defending the championship, and he's not, the stakes aren't exactly laid out. Yung story lang is, if you want to have a shot at Brock Lesnar,
you're going to have to go through the Rumble.
Yeah, go through the Royal Rumble. So I don't know where this is going to lead. I'm not exactly a fan of how this is going, just because I want the champion to defend his title, or if the champion's going to be in the Rumble, just like what Triple H did to Roman Reigns in 2016,
the title
better be on the line.
Yeah. Gina, how do you feel about this?
It's incredibly confusing because we don't know where this goes yet. But however, we can't really say for sure since we have a few more weeks now till the Royal Rumble, like two more weeks.
Three more weeks.
See, that's enough. I think that's enough of a time for WWE to clear things out. I think it's still too early into this inception of Brock Lesnar to judge the storyline completely. I want to give them the benefit of the doubt and try to see where this goes.
So
because at least we get to see Brock Lesnar, the champion, in a WWE ring, which is what champions are supposed to do anyway.
Yeah, and you know, it's not every year that you get Brock Lesnar in the Rumble. I think we've only really ever had it like twice or thrice in his career.
I was going to say, in this stage of his career, we haven't had it at all.
No, meron na, 2016. When it was for the championship, when it was one versus all.
I remember. Yeah,
Brock was there. So
who eliminated him? Was that the year that Strowman eliminated?
No. No. I think it was like Goldberg or something.
Oh yeah, fuck! I remember that.
No. Goldberg came back late 2016. Hindi ko na malala. Basta
may nangyari.
Yeah, basta Brock Lesnar was in the Rumble.
Yeah, shenanigans happen. If I'm not mistaken, shenanigans.
Or the Undertaker.
That was the Taker shenanigans.
Shenanigans happened, and Taker caused Brock Lesnar to be eliminated.
Right.
Oh man.
So you know, if anything, people like us, we've come to hate Brock even more after this. So I guess if the idea is to make him the biggest heel around by doing that, then what? Mission accomplished na naman. WWE succeeding in trolling us once again?
Yeah.
I don't know. I say we let this play out. Feel however you want to feel, but also let this play out. Right?
All right.
Time for us to get our interview with Ring Magazine's Ryan Songalia. Lots of fun stories on its way right now. It's been about 5 years since we had our last guest, and it's great to have him back here in the Philippines and back here on the Wrestling Podcast. Please welcome back our guest from Ring Magazine and all the way back from the U.S., Mr. Ryan Songalia.
Thank you very much for having me back.
It has been a while.
Where? First off, you have a soundboard there. Are there any applauses? There we go. Thank you.
There you go.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
There you go.
We're still not used to all this technology.
Yeah,
so.
I'm not used to the fanfare. I mean, I get a little shy like that.
Yeah, so Ryan's back after a very, very long hiatus from the Philippines, from Rappler, from just being around the scene here. For those of you that remember, this is the guy who was the sports editor of Rappler. He was also the guy who was the reason why there was a regular wrestling column on Rappler.
Yeah, I don't know if it's ever been revealed who that is.
Oh, he's unmasked. Yeah.
Oh, he's been unmasked. Okay.
He's not it himself, but... Do you want to tell the story?
Which one?
No. How that started?
Oh, I became the sports editor of Rappler, and to entertain myself, I was like, I need wrestling content around me, because if I'm going to read stories, it might as well be stories that are interesting to me. So Michael Buesa knew, you know, I can say it?
Yeah, you can.
Romeo. And he's like,
the guy who's not here.
The guy who's not here, unfortunately. Basically. I hope he feels better, though.
The bastard who's not here.
Hey, some people get sick. It's that time of year. Romeo, he's like, yeah, I got this guy who's a wrestling columnist. And I'm like, all right, yeah, cool. I'd love to talk to him. And I was actually telling, I was putting Romeo over the other day. Saying that I really missed his columns, because he really he has a passion for wrestling and his writing, and he's a good writer as well. So, long live Joe the Grappler.
Yeah, Joe the Grappler Marsalis. That was a pseudonym he went with at the time. And it was just WWE that he wrote about. He wrote about New Japan on Rappler.
Yeah. Actually, I remember he had a really good story about Shibata right before he got hurt. And that was actually one of my favorite articles to edit. And also, there's a lot of PWR stuff there, too, which was kind of funny, because it was like kind of keeping kayfabe about things. And I really enjoyed it. And it, just being at Rappler, I saw from the start the PWR guys had something special there. Actually, you know, credit again to Buesa, because he was another guy who was telling me, hey, you know, you need to check these guys out. They're going to do something. And I really enjoyed covering the PWR shows. It's actually some of my favorite memories as a wrestling fan. I have been at PWR shows. Just the passion. I was telling the editor earlier that you know, what makes PWR special really was the fans. Like, it's not like a boxing show where, you know, guys will come to support their favorite boxers. Like, the PWR fans come out to literally every single show, and it's like they don't miss a show. They know all the characters, and they go nuts for everything. So, being a Rappler, I got a lot of latitude to cover things that I really enjoyed, and, you know, it was some of the best times of my life.
Yeah, you were one of the OG fans. Like, you were there from the Makati Cinema Square days.
Yeah. I was there from the first show, actually.
First show, and then I remember, like, later on, you just got... When you brought out Patrick, that shit...
You were really into it.
That shit got in... Like, I mean, I've seen every kind of fan walk through our doors. But Patrick fucking Taylor, bless his soul, Patrick. good man, doing good work in the world.
Yeah, he's doing God's work.
He's doing God's work. And it's just you two, it's like, it's the sports editor of Rappler and this man who is helping the agricultural endeavors of the entire country.
Yeah.
And both of you fucking walk in like it's fucking NWO outsiders with a fucking cooler full of beers. In a time that we were like, we can bring beers to Cinema Square?
I was almost brown bagging it, kind of. I was like, you know, I was looking around a little bit, make sure that, is this cool? Am I breaking laws here? But we had the Hawaiian shirts on.
Yeah.
And we're rolling in, like, we got this cooler that had wheels on it. And I'm riding it like a little kid riding, like, one of those little toy cars that they have in the backyards. I was hammered that night. And I remember... Ken Warren, who was my favorite wrestler in the Philippines from day one. I was like, holy shit, this is my guy right here. Like, I don't know what's going on here, but that's the dude. And he comes by and grabs our beer and, like, starts chugging it mid-match. And we were having a great time that night.
One of the few encounters I've had with you was when I see you during a show with your big Ken Warren signs. Giant poster boards full of Ken Warren
signs. Hey, Chino, you know what? If it got Ken Warren one step in the WWE door, it made all the difference.
Right? No, I mean, I'm not calling him out for it. It's just a memorable thing to see. It's like, there's this one solid Ken Warren fan.
At a time,
a sea of Panzer Army people.
At a time when Ken Warren wasn't as beloved as he is today.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you know the thing, because he was a heel, right?
Yeah, he was. He was trying
to be a heel. And the thing was, is that I was going nuts for him like a face. But then if you look at it, really... Like, me cheering for him almost made him a heel. You know what I mean?
We have the drunk American guy cheering for this guy.
The two drunk American guys.
We had two drunk Americans who were really loud, just cheering, going nuts for Ken Warren. And I mean, he's our boy. At the same time, he's probably thinking, oh, man, come on, I'm trying to get some booze here. What the hell?
All right, you know, it was really fun, like trying to go back, right, to, like the OG days of PWR. But you left Rappler what 2016 I think
2018 beginning of 2018 yeah.
All right, so you left Rappler 2018. You left the country as well at the time. Can you tell us like what the story was there? Because like you just went off the radar and then all of a sudden you were back in the U.S.
Yeah, no, I just I needed a break. I've been running really hard. Writing, I, you know, that's the thing with me is that, like, I don't know how to give anything less than like 110% to the point of like being like obsessed with work. And I was just like, you know what, I want to go back. I hadn't seen my mom in a while. My mom now lives in Virginia. So, you know, I flew back and I just stayed with my mom for a little bit, you know, because catch up with her, you know, hang out with my dad, my brothers out there. You know, I have a lot of cousins here in the Philippines, especially Leyte, you know, shout out to Tanawan. But, you know, my family really is back there and I just wanted to change the pace for a bit, but I it took me a bit to kind of get my feet back underneath me, but now I'm busy with school. I'm at CUNY grad school, and I'm doing Ring Magazine. Actually, I expanded to now I'm the one of the editors of the website. So,
dang.
Yeah, nice. No, I've been doing a lot of stuff with that too.
And you're a dad.
And I'm a dad.
That's something that, you know, not everyone who knows you as a human being sees, because like that's life changing, man. Like you choose grad school, sure, the Ring Magazine stuff, we see a lot of that, but then
that's the biggest status update.
You got a baby girl that is beautiful.
Oh, thank you so much.
You two are doing a great job raising her.
Yeah, no, I really have to give all the credit to my wife, because she's really a superhero when it comes to Emma. Emma's about to be 9 months in a couple of days, and it's my wife is really like a rock star, because when I'm at school, like she's taking care of her, and then like I come in at the end, you know what I mean? Like when everyone's starting to wind down, and then I'll be the one changing diapers and feeding and things like that.
And then that 5 minutes of playtime is just golden.
Yeah, and until like, you know, she starts like ripping out my eyebrows. And then
I mean, like, none of us are parents here, just you, right? So like, what's the biggest difference from not being a parent to being a parent?
It changes your life. It really does. There's nothing that can prepare you. Not even like when I've been an uncle so many times over, and it was nothing, you know, compared to, because when like my nephews and nieces would go nuts, I would just give the baby back to their dad. Like, all right, well, you guys have fun. I'm gonna go out and hang out. Now it's like, no, I'm. This is.
Now you're stuck with it.
Yeah, no. Emma is really the boss. I call her Boss Baby Emma, because she really runs the show.
Have you introduced her to any wrestling yet? Or?
I had a photo, and I think it was X-Pac who actually liked the photo.
Wow.
Of me watching one of these British pay-per-views on the network. It was one of the lesser known Bret Hart versus Undertaker matches, and I just took a photo of her like watching the network, and yeah, no, I'm always holding her, so no, I'll have my other hand with like a phone. And like she'll kind of watch whenever I'm watching, so she consumes a lot of wrestling content.
Dang,
I mean, starting like, them young.
People commonly associate you with the boxing writing, right? Yeah, because of your work with Ring Magazine. But in the time since you've left the Philippines and since the Rappler column on wrestling was discontinued, which companies have you kept up with?
I watch, you know, because here's the thing. At school, actually, believe it or not, there are some wrestling fans. So they keep, like, I would have, like, Monday evening classes. And then afterwards, I would, they would have WWE Raw on, like, you know, on TV. So I would watch Raw. I used to catch a lot of the AEW stuff. I haven't as much since the first few, like, weeks because it's been so crazy with school. But
yeah, sure.
When I'm on the train, like going to school, when I should probably be studying for whatever quiz, I'm like catching up with SmackDown or whatever. Some of it's kind of hard to follow around long because it gets convoluted after a while. But Raw, I would say, because of school.
Have you been able to like catch the indie shows around the area? Because like New York is a hotbed for wrestling.
You know what? Actually, I'll tell you what I watch. I was at the Super Show when you were in New York. Actually, Stan.
Yeah.
With Ring of Honor and New Japan, and
the one at the Garden.
Yeah, the one at the Garden. Yeah. I caught a SmackDown show, obviously, when you were there too for WrestleMania weekend. But I haven't been to as many shows. There were a couple times, like I actually missed TJP when he was in my neighborhood Queens.
This is for the House of Glory shows.
Yeah.
Fucking shit! When he won.
Yeah,
when he won the title.
I know. I really wanted to be there. There happened to be a boxing show I had to cover that night, and I was really pissed off that my scheduling didn't match up.
Well, he's there. He's there more often now.
Yeah. I would imagine. Although I didn't get to see when he was here. I heard that was awesome.
That was sick.
It was, yeah.
You know what I actually watch a lot on social media, even though it's not a TV show? I still follow a lot of the PWR stuff, believe it or not. That's why, like, when I saw Trian, I knew who he was. I'm like, oh, yeah. Like, you're the guy who does this thing right here, right? And
Inch bump shit.
Yeah. That shit.
Were you still here when the Naughty Boys became a thing?
No,
when
he Trian wasn't.
De La Torre became a thing?
No, he wasn't coming to shows. He wasn't coming to shows at the time.
That was when I was, like, really buried by work, you know, at that time, and when Bueza would show up only, and I would find out what's going on from that. But you guys are PWR really doing a really good job of with social media. So I follow a lot of the stuff that's going on there. Like, it cracks me up because I'm like, of course that gets over. Of course, yeah. Knowing that crowd,
yeah.
I'm like, this is like the most, like, some of these storylines and characters are so genius. I'm like, of course that got over. Like, that's it's like the perfect, you know, like, you know who, like, cracks me up the most?
Who?
I watch it and I'm just like, I couldn't stop laughing because, like, it was the perfect character. Jemmerlin?
Yeah.
When I saw this, I'm like,
yes.
I'm like, of course that got over. That's hilarious.
Yes.
And Camus loses his shit.
Because I was watching, like, it was like, because it's so, like, almost like, what's the term? Like, those, like, daytime, like, variety shows.
Yeah, noontime shows.
Yeah, those noontime shows. And it's just like, cause you know how, like, they have, like, only a short amount of time to learn these new dances. So it's kind of, you know what I mean? Like, they have to learn every week a new dance. So they're not going to be, like, the best dances. And it was almost like, I don't know if it was, like, one of those rejected, like, noontime dances. But when she did it, I'm like, this is the best thing ever. Like, I wish I was, I was popping, like, on social media for that.
Oh, man.
And it's a very Pinoy thing. Like, if you've never been exposed to anything Pinoy, to Pinoy culture or whatever, you'll never get it. It flies over your head.
Yeah, exactly. That was the genius of it, because it was like, it was so bad, it was good. You know what I mean? Like, that's in which, especially for me now, you know, as an adult, like, what makes good wrestling is, like, being so bad it's good.
Right.
That was so bad it's good.
Like, going off on that end of the spectrum.
Yeah, if you're gonna be cheesy and corny, like, be all the way there, you know?
You mentioned the WrestleMania weekend from this past April, and, like, one of my highlights from that entire trip was when we hung out in Brooklyn, taking shots at, like, 5:30 or 6 p.m.
Oh, yeah.
Right outside Barclays. That was crazy. I never thought I could enjoy live wrestling until I was getting, you know, sort of kind of drunk in New York City, and then, you know, entering the Barclays. I have to thank you for that, because that was quite the trip.
Well, this was the genius of it. It was that the waitress who gave us the shot, she miscalculated how to use the phone to record the video, and, like, well, all right, so she fucked up. So, like, she gives us a free shot, so we wound up getting two shots for the price of one.
Yeah,
and I was not expecting to do that, like, yeah, you know, get two shots back to back. So we both walked out of there with, like, the Asian flush and red faces, and you know, there was another PWR wrestler,
Chris
there.
Panzer.
Okay, so Panzer. We can say Panzer was there. Yeah, he I guess he was watching his carbs. You know what I mean? So he didn't take a shot. But then when I saw his abs, I'm like, of course, and he's got to keep that in check. You know what I mean? Like,
well, he's a champion now.
Yeah, he's a champion, and, you know, he's getting the washboard abs on. So, like, he can't be indulging like that. But yeah, I was like, oh my goodness. And that actually, interesting thing, that was the last time I went out before my daughter was born, because the next day my wife went into labor. So,
oh wow,
so I got, like, that was like my final stand, you know, as almost like a man child watching wrestling.
And after that, your life changed forever.
Yeah, then it was a wrap.
And then it's like, oh man, gotta go to grad school now.
Yeah, right, because I didn't have enough on my plate.
I remember when we were having drinks right before that SmackDown, you were telling us about this one wrestler that you actually got to work with. And this is a wrestler who appeared on Raw, I believe, like the week prior or something like that. And she just appeared again on the last Raw of 2019.
Yeah. So what was it? Krista Rivera, right? So she played. Actually, this past week, she played Bobby Lashley's first wife, right?
Oh,
so you know the one
her.
Who interrupts.
Yeah.
So I knew her like a decade ago because like we worked together. We were waiters at Cheesecake Factory in New Jersey. Yeah, and I remember her telling me that she was, you know, in the indie wrestling and that she was, you know, her dad was a wrestler before, and like she had all these photos. Cause I was like, oh, that's cool, you're getting into wrestling. But apparently she's like been in wrestling since she was a kid, and like her whole life was wrestling before that. So she was really hustling hard to like, you know, make her dream come true. And then, though, actually that was that, because we went to watch the SmackDown together.
Yeah.
So she, the Iconics, is it?
The Iconics.
Yeah, so she was the local tag, one of the local tag.
Like the Brooklyn Bellas or whatever.
Something
it was.
Like
yeah.
that, yeah. So then she was actually the only one who got any offense in from the
from
jobber
that
team.
Match, yeah.
Yeah, and so I remember back in the day, like, because first off, I'm sitting there and I hadn't thought about it in a while. And then I see up on the screen, I'm like, hey, I know her. Yeah. I used to run her food to the table back in the day. And then, like, I remember, like, telling her, like, because this was before, like, a lot of the podcasts had come out, and, like, there was this as much, like, exposing of the business. And really, the only thing that I could think of that when people were talking about the business was Scott Hall had a YouTube show where he would, you know, he would have moments of clarity where he would, like, have some tidbits about, you know, the craft of it. And I was like, yeah, you should watch that, you know.
And this was after he got sober.
This is before he got sober.
Oh. Yeah. I remember bits and pieces of this.
Yeah. Last call was Scott Hall,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Like a lot of it was belligerent, but then there were bits and pieces that were actually pretty informative.
Yeah, when he would like have like one moment of clarity, and you had to kind of dig a little bit to find
yeah,
it.
Yeah, no, it's exactly. No, I remember seeing this. This was like early
2000s. YouTube days.
Yeah.
Around mid 2000s.
Yeah.
I remember somebody sent me the video of Razor Ramon, Scott Hall.
Mm.
And it was just hilarious because he was just blasted in the one video that I saw. And
yeah.
Apparently it gets better.
Yeah, so like I'm hoping that she actually gets some more work. Cause like whenever she's been on, she has killed it. You know, it's just that she hasn't gotten like that big thing. She had like one match in NXT, and then she did the thing where with the Iconics. And then she did the thing where she gets knocked off the apron by Lana. And yeah. You know, she's someone who really should get like a big push.
I'm curious though, like so you work with someone and they tell you that they're an indie wrestler. Like this was at a time when people weren't, as you said, as open about people. The curtain back as they are right now. So how does that conversation even start?
You know, I remember where it was. We were literally in front of like, you know, where they keep the food hot, like under the lamps.
Yeah.
And like, you know, we were just talking about stuff. I'm like, yeah. She's like, I'm a wrestler. I'm like, oh really? Yeah, I'm a big wrestling fan. And you know what I mean? And like, we started talking about stuff like that. And, I remember cause like, everyone, all the coworkers, we were all like Facebook friends, and she had like these photos of her, like when she was a little kid and working in Puerto Rico and stuff like that. Like, yeah, like, and she just happened to be living in New Jersey, I guess. So, you know, it's the best place to make quick money and also to kind of stay hungry is working in a restaurant, because you'll be thinking, you know, I can't do this forever. I need to make something happen.
Yeah, I mean, like, if you really want to dig deep into Ryan's backstory, go check out that episode from 2015. That's
inspirational
when you really
shit.
Go into detail on how you grinded and how you made your way to where you are right now. Segueing off of that, I remember, I think it was this was last year on your Instagram or whichever social media it was, I saw a photo of you and Enzo Amore hanging out.
Oh, fuck. Because, okay, you tell the story, but
yeah, let's
it involves boxing. It
yeah.
involves boxing.
So the funniest thing, all right, so I'll start it. So the... I train sometimes to the extent that I train anymore is at this place called State of Fitness Boxing Gym in North Bergen, New Jersey. Shout out to Desmond Boyle. He's a good friend of mine. He's the owner of the gym. So Des has this gym, and a couple of blocks away, this guy moves in, you know, who's also from New Jersey. And, you know, he's basically like he stops in. He sees this gym. He's like, oh, shit, you know, there's a boxing gym here. And I get this message from Dez. He's like, yeah, do you know this wrestler, Enzo Amore? Like, fuck yeah, I know Enzo Amore. Yeah. Like,
and this is post-WWE, pre-ROH.
Yeah, this is post that. And so then he's like, yeah, he's training here, and he loves his gym. And I'm like, all right, cool, because, like, In fact, I'll tell you a funny story about that. So WrestleMania this past year was in Secaucus, right? At the Meadowlands, whatever, East Rutherford. So so Enzo Amore plays basketball at the park that's named after the Cinderella Man, James Braddock, right?
Yep.
So because that's the big hero of the town, North Bergen, is Cinderella Man. So so the mayor, you know, posts this thing. Oh, guess who's in town for WrestleMania weekend? It's Enzo Amore, and he was spotted at the park. I'm like, yeah, he's there every day. Like, he lives right in that
lives
town.
A block down.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he's not there for WrestleMania. He trains there. He does, actually, if you see a lot of the podcasts that he does, like, there's this, Chris Van Vliet did a shoot with him there. What's the other title wrestling? Those guys, they did a shoot there. So, like, that place where they're doing those shoots that's the gym. Big Cass is out there too. And you never know who's gonna drop by, because like I went there one time and like what's the guy's name? The one who fought Punk in UFC? Mickey Gall. Mickey Gall was there. I'm like, oh crap, Mickey Gall's hanging out here too now. Like it's kind of the hot spot now. So yeah, the first time I meet Enzo, he's like, I'm just sitting in the office, I'm chilling, and you know, I'm not trying to sweat Enzo because I'm sure he gets it all the time. Like, and then like he pulls out his phone and he's listening to John Denver,
wow,
some kind of John Denver song. And then he unplugs his phone and he blasts it. He's like, just in case you were wondering what Enzo Moore is playing on his phone, it's John Denver. I'm like, oh, good to know. And then we're just talking. Like, he's a cool dude. Just like, I know he comes off as like an asshole, but really good dude. Him and his friends, they're always at the gym. Really good guys. Just good guys from New Jersey. You know what I mean? If that's your thing, those are the guys.
Did you get to score like an interview with him or a sit down?
You know what? I didn't. Just because like I never could. I've talked to him. Like, you know, we've chatted. It's just that I never. Because every time I'm talking to someone I'm really interested in, it's almost like an interview. It's just not formal and it's not published anywhere. But it's like I never had the outlet, you know, to like, well, I'm going to do this wrestling thing like in the U.S. But yeah, no, if you ever want to, you know, talk to him, maybe I can talk to someone.
Hey, yeah, why not?
You take that.
I mean, like, we can always patch someone in. Like, that's the advantage of being here with Podcast Network Asia. So, you know.
Yeah, you guys might be better at doing that than I am.
In my head, I'm just like wondering what the fuck's an interview with Enzo Amore gonna be like.
Listen, I would be down for that.
Any kind of conversation with Enzo Amore is a conversation you'll never forget.
I'm gonna bust out my certified GT shirt.
literally at this gym, like, you know, his the belt was there, like the cruiserweight belt. Like,
I was about to ask about that. Yeah.
So like, I was just like, oh shit, here's I guess the cruiserweight belt is here, and so yeah, no, I was like, that was pretty cool actually, and I can't trust it enough. Enzo, you know, whatever he comes across off on TV, that's just, you know, how he pays his bills. Nicest guy, really humble dude, and you know, I'm glad he's having a lot of success right now. He's having almost like a new renaissance on the indie scene right now.
What was it like being in the garden for that moment when Enzo and Cass just hopped the rails and then
they
caused that that commotion?
You know what's funny?
Like, sidebar though, I remember we talked about this on the pod. I was on that episode.
I wasn't.
It was the three of us at my place,
yeah.
At the Balai, and we started talking about it, and the two guys were like, hey, maybe Ryan Sokalia might have some inside information.
No, I'll give them credit. I wasn't tipped off to it, which made it even better, because I'm like, oh, shit, like, you know, they're there. Like, and then I saw, like, behind-the-scenes videos later on that were posted, but, like they were, like, I popped hard for that, because I'm like, hell yeah, like, people were saying that they were going to do that at Mania, but like, but when they did it here, it was a great moment, and especially with, you know, to watch them with Bubba and those guys, it was, you know, because it made me realize, you know, that was one of the great tag teams that never got to win the titles.
Yeah,
and then the thing was, I mentioned that to Enzo, and he said, "Well, that's the angle, then." You know what I mean? We were the best tag team that never won the titles. That's the reason to tune in. Then, so it's like, I think that's the long plan. Thailand is that, like, you know, they're tag titles all over the world to win, you know, and I think that's what they're going to go for.
Yeah, because they've reunited recently, right? Yeah. So they're kind of going on this tour right now.
Mm-hmm. And Cass isn't in jail.
Yeah.
There's that.
Too. Yeah, there's a whole bit about him just being in a better place right now.
Yeah.
What was the atmosphere like in the garden for the G1 Supercard? Because not a lot of people from the Philippines even get to watch a New Japan show or a Ring of Honor show, let alone a Supercard like that.
Well, like, for me, it was great because what I really was going nuts for, you know, because there's so much talent on that show, but what I went nuts for is ZSJ. I was like, that's like my guy, right? Like, Zack Sabre Jr. is my guy. And I love the whole pairing with Taka Michinoku. That was like my favorite angle there. And I was just going nuts. I'm sure who did he work that night?
ZSJ.
Yeah. But I just remember ZSJ like stretch. It wasn't Tanahashi. I forget who it was. It was someone.
No. He was feuding with Tanahashi at the time.
Yeah. But I'm trying to think who it was, because he stretched the hell out of something. My friend, who, you know, is a huge wrestling fan but had never seen New Japan, really.
Yeah.
He actually went nuts. Like, how the hell is this guy, like, freaking his arm still on a tag? It was like that kind of, like, stretching.
He's the best technical wrestler full stop in the world. 100%. That's how he is.
100%. It's like, it's fun because, like, I always appreciate these matches because it's to have a ZSJ match, you have to have the right guy because it's so technical. It's like, it's not like sports entertainment. It's really like,
it's catch as catch can.
Yeah, it's like 1930s, you know, wrestling, except he's not fat.
But like, from where you were sitting or from where you were at, how was the reception from the American audience towards, say, the Japanese guys?
Oh, no, because I'd say, you know, wrestling fans now are fans of wrestling. You know what I mean? So it's like, it's not like back in the day where, like, you would only get WWE if you're in America and you'd have to, like, wait, like, a couple months to get tapes from Japan. Like, or, like, you know, you may live in the South and only get WCW. Now it's like the wrestling fans in America especially, and, you know, here too, to a big extent. Like, the fans are really savvy, so they knew who the guys were. And, like, I was sitting around people from like England and all over the US, like, all walks of life, and they knew everyone, and they were going nuts. It was like, I guess they watch every show there. So, like, I mean, the people were going nuts for Okada, you know, like, the reception was almost like he was like John Cena, but it was like he was getting a heel reaction, a face reaction. You know what I mean? It was like, people were really into it. And I'm sure they could, like, when Cheeseburger, they went nuts for him. Like, I mean,
everyone loses their shit for Cheeseburger. Yeah, 100%. Anyway.
Yeah, it goes without saying.
Yeah, but that was the show that Okada and Jay White closed.
Yeah,
for the title,
which I'll tell you something. Like, so this is like me being a heel fan. Like, I was trying to buy
into.
Do
you like Jay White?
I'll tell you what, I liked Jay White more because of the way that the finish went, where, like, you know, he got like 100 like tombstones and then freaking, you know, and then like the Rainmaker 100 times. I'm just like, all right, this is overkill. Like, unless he's gonna reverse one of these things, like, I don't need to see a 2 minute, you know, finish like this, you know.
Yeah, but that was like that was the beginning of the rain that just ended this past weekend.
Yeah,
at Wrestle Kingdom.
And then could I just say something real quick? Because, you know, Romeo's not here, but this includes him too. I just want to thank you guys for really what you guys do for wrestling. Because it's everyone really plays their part, you know, for keeping it alive. But to host those shows at Skinny Mike's, and it just kind of, it built a community where, like, you know what, maybe you know, it's not filling an arena, but it's a place where people who like wrestling can go and be around other people who like wrestling. And I think that really means something to a lot of people. It's that sense of community.
Thank you.
I just want to, you know, give you guys props for all that you guys do.
He's putting us over.
Yeah. Ryan Songilli are putting us over big time.
And like this is a good segue for the Royal Rumble.
That's right. Yeah, the Royal Rumble viewing party. Quick plug. We'll talk about it more at the end. January 27th.
We're doing it again, boys!
5th annual Royal Rumble viewing party. We've been doing this 5 years now. And it's going to be as early as 5 a.m. We'll be there. I will tell you the details later on. Yes, sir.
Holy
right
shit.
After the PWR show the night before. Going back off of what you were saying, Ryan, the way I see it, it's always been like creating a safe space, you know, for wrestling fans. Because, like, for the longest time, when you come out as a wrestling fan, it always gets treated with hostility.
Yeah.
Or if not hostility, like condescension.
Can I tell you a funny story?
Yeah, sure.
Yep. So I know. I don't think I've ever shared this story with anyone, literally anyone. So,
not even your wife?
My wife was there, actually.
Oh, okay.
So, nice. are you guys familiar with the Filipino Silicon Valley pioneer Dado Benatao?
Yeah, man.
Yeah, okay.
I think I've heard of him. Yeah, yeah.
Dado,
yeah.
I've been in the room for a CNN interview that he did.
Mm-hmm. So
he's a good guy. He's
really cool guy. So the funny thing is, my wife was making a joke about, you know, we were at dinner with him, and my wife was making a joke, but yeah, my, you know, Ryan, yeah, he's smart, but he likes wrestling, you know, yada yada yada. And Dado Benato's like, yeah, I love wrestling too. Like, yeah, Dado Benato's a wrestling fan.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. So he was like going in about, like, you know, when on his downtime he'll watch wrestling and stuff like that, and like he was a big fan. Like, so like my wife is just sitting there like, foiled again.
And this is, and just for those who don't know, if you Google this man, he is one of the most intelligent human beings that ever worked in Silicon Valley, let alone be a Filipino innovator. He's one of those scientists that you should know exists out there.
Camus is calling me out because he saw me Google Dado Benatao.
No, no, fuck no, man. It's just
that what you were trying to do, Camus.
No,
you trying to shame me for my lack of IT knowledge.
No, fat man, I will shame you for other things, but not that. No, because this is a guy. This is a guy that is so under the radar that I wouldn't expect 90% of our listeners to know who he is.
No, speaking of famous wrestling fans here in the Philippines, I was there at Aneta for the last WWE show that was here in Manila, right? Mm-hmm. And then there was this row of wrestling fans behind me. One of them was my friend. And after the show,
shouts to Wacky.
Yeah, shout out to Wacky Mendoza. Oh, he takes a picture of me and my dad. And then afterward, my dad's like, oh, go take their picture. Like, you know, just return the favor. So I take their picture. And then my dad tells me, wasn't that Bam Aquino? Like in their group. And I'm like, no, it's not Bam Aquino. Like, that guy has a mustache. That's not Bam Aquino.
But Bam Aquino hasn't been a senator for a few months.
So like the following day, Wacky uploads the photo on Instagram, right? And then I see the tag, Bam Aquino. I'm like, what the fuck?
And no one besides Bam Aquino looks like Bam Aquino. So it's
his mustache now.
No one alive looks like Bam Aquino now.
The argument
can be made.
Yeah.
Right?
Because his uncle's dead, is that what you're saying?
Yes. Okay. That's because he looks like Ninoy, yes.
Yeah, but I think that night he wasn't wearing the glasses and he had that Rusev mustache.
He has contacts. He has contacts for his shit.
No. Yeah, yeah. So I totally didn't recognize him. But
maybe he got LASIK. You don't know. He maybe got LASIK.
Yeah, since
he still wears glasses. I still see it. Like when he goes through e-gaming events, he still got the glasses.
He goes to e-gaming events too?
Dude,
yeah,
he's
into esports.
He's such a big deal in the esports scene because he was the one who authored the bill that allowed these the national team to get funding now. The guys who competed in the SEA Games were partially funded by bills that Bam Aquino endorsed.
Yeah, so like that's one of his lasting pieces of legacy.
He gave us esports through the government, which works.
Oh.
In your work at Ring Magazine, have you encountered like other wrestling fans from like the boxing world? Is there a big intersection?
Also, to add on, Tyson Fury. What are you thoughts?
Yo. Okay,
Tyson Fury first. Tyson Fury, I'll tell you something about Tyson Fury. When he first came to America, like years ago, before anyone knew who he was, I was one of the first guys who interviewed him. And I remember like he was like, so he did the press conference and then he was at, this was like 2009, 2010, whenever he, like before he was anybody, and like he was out on St. Patrick's Day singing at the parade with everybody, and even if you don't know who he is, he's like a huge guy and he's like really funny. So
he's like 6'7". Yeah, almost 7 feet.
Yeah, I mean, no, he's like he's listed as 6'9", but you know who knows? Maybe he was doing the WWE thing before with his height, but So Tyson Fury, Tyson Fury, I always said, if there was a guy who was built, you know, for that life, it's Tyson Fury. And I thought not just that, but it also really was huge for Braun Strowman, that they trusted him with a guy who wasn't a worker to have a safe match like that and not like hurt the heavyweight champion.
In Saudi Arabia.
In Saudi Arabia, of all places. Yeah, so like, you know, they really trusted him. I thought that kind of spoke to the kind of worker and professional that Braun Strowman is. But yeah, no, Tyson Fury was like the perfect guy because he was living basically as a wrestler, but he was a boxer. But yeah, I'll tell you, a lot of I'm trying to think. Like, so Manny Pacquiao, yeah. I've interviewed him and I've asked him who are his favorite wrestlers, as he's a super fan. Like,
is he?
Like, I'll say something. This big boxing guy, he was already a senator. No, he wasn't a senator. He was a congressman at the time. But I'm sitting in his house and he's watching. He doesn't watch boxing. I've never seen him watch boxing. I don't even know if he likes boxing. But, like, he will watch Kung Fu and wrestling. And like I remember, like watching like him, he was watching like Drew Galloway with McIntyre against R-Truth match on like Superstars, like, and he was sitting there like really intent, like watching Superstars, like yeah, he really. And I asked him, "Who are your favorite guys?" And he was like, "So he was a big Shawn Michaels fan, Stone Cold." And Bret Hart, and like I remember, he's like, yeah, I like Stone Cold, and he's doing like the stunner, like right here, like, and it's like, oh, it's a congressman talking about how much he likes the Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Didn't he also get Batista or somebody to bring
he
him?
Did.
To
he walk did. Him yeah. out there? Batista yeah. walked him out, and Taker walked him out.
Yeah, Taker walked, and also like I remember because a lot of boxing and wrestling have you know been intertwined for you know since they first began as things. Because even like a lot of the wrestling magazines were the companies that own wrestling magazines also own boxing magazines, like, you know, like Boxing Illustrated was owned by the same company that had Pro Wrestling Illustrated, you know what I mean? Yeah, exactly. Like, although Boxing Illustrated is no longer exists, but it's always been an overlap. And a lot of in fact, on Twitter, like a lot of us like boxing guys, we catch a lot of flack from some of the older boxing guys for being like huge wrestling fans.
Why?
Also. Because, like, you know, we'll be tweeting not every Sunday, like, whatever's like the big pay per view, or yeah. like we tweet about a lot. We catch a lot of heat, you know what I mean? Because there's a lot of super fans in boxing who like wrestling.
But, like, with the MMA community, at least the stuck up subset of the MMA community, they give the wrestling fans the whole, oh, you know, that shit's fake, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I get it all the time, yeah.
So boxing fans are kind of like that too? Is that what you're
some,
saying?
Some, like, you know, some of the more dismissive ones. Because, like, a lot of the boxing writers, like, all the time, like a lot of the boxing writers, like when we're not like working, we'll be hanging out and like watching wrestling shows together. Like that's just our way of blowing off steam. I'm trying to think. I remember this one guy who fought Nonito Donaire, Raul Martinez. He actually told me that he got the idea of like he would run from from his dressing room to the ring because he was a big Ultimate Warrior fan.
Uh-huh.
I remember him telling me that. I'm trying to think of some of the guys. But like there will always be guys. I actually X-Pac, Sean Waltman, he was a boxing guy too. He loved boxing, and he would always call me the Filipino Burt Sugar, which was like a big compliment because, like, you know, Burt Sugar passed a while ago, and he was a friend of mine as well. And he's like, yeah, you remind me of Burt Sugar, and Burt Sugar was, you know, this boxing historian, but he was also lesser known as a big wrestling historian. So like wow. he was really like a guy that like knew the wrestling. And my the guy who trained me how to box, the late Jimmy the Cat Dupree, rest in peace, he was a huge wrestling fan, right? So like he would have like under right by the ring, he would have all these magazines, like boxing magazines, and he would also have like 1960s and 1970s vintage wrestling magazines. And if I talked to him about boxing, like yeah, kind of okay, and if he knew the guy, you know, like he crossed paths with him, he'll tell me a story, but he would really get animated about wrestling. So we would always talk about wrestling. Believe it or not, and it's like it's always like a thing. Like I don't care where you're from, you know, not like the Backstreet Boys song, like, but like you will if you're a wrestling fan, like we have something to talk about. You right. know what I mean? Yeah. So that's just a bond that fans have.
It's funny because, like, when you look at it on the outset, there are a lot of similarities. But then you take a look at the nitty gritty of it. Of course, boxing is a competitive sport, and mm-hmm. pro wrestling is sports entertainment or whatever you want.
It's competitive too, though.
But it is competitive, yeah. right? Like whether you're on the local independent level or in the WWE, it is still a competition.
Guys are out there burying each other. Like, I mean, I grew up in the Attitude Era, where like, you know, The Rock would just get on the microphone, and just end people's careers. You know, yeah. what I'm saying? Like.
it's competitive.
And I mean, just look at the scene here. PWR started out in a boxing ring of all places, right?
And I'll tell you the funniest thing, because I would cover a lot of boxing shows there, and they could never sell tickets, right? It was just not possible. One of my friends who promotes shows, he tried it and no one showed up. And,
at MCS.
Yeah, at Makati City, yeah. And but PWR was always like, had like a lot of fans, and people could not believe that was a thing, that like you could sell tickets to something in Makati Cinema Square.
Yeah, what's funny about that time, and we say this a lot now, especially as we look back at it in hindsight, it was very much like Fight Club. It's kind of like this thing that everybody would be promoted to everybody, but at the same time, it's very hush-hush, like, oh, we're going to PWR.
Yeah, yeah. You know what? I used to tell people, like, if you're in Manila, this is, I don't care, even if you're not a wrestling fan, this is the place to go. Like, this is, like, do not miss these shows. They are wacky. They are fun. Like, it's just a good time. You know, even if, like, because now I got to say, like, I've seen the quality of the wrestling now. You guys have gotten so much better. Like, it's, I mean, you know, it's really, like, there are a couple of people there that I think could really be like WWE level, even NXT, something along that those lines. You know, they could wrestle, you know, something like DDT or, you know, anywhere in the world. The talent level right now is really that good. And especially just getting over with charisma. That's the big thing also that I've seen come along. But like back then, even like it was just people were having fun. And if you're having fun, that's contagious, you know?
You've been around different types of crowds, like whether it's boxing or wrestling. And, you know, when you talk about the wrestling crowds here in the Philippines versus the ones you've been around in the U.S., like I ask this question to, you know, to everybody from outside the Philippines all the time. Like, what's the biggest thing that stands out about the Filipino wrestling fan?
I'll tell you, the number one thing is it's a sense of community. It's really because it's like, it's almost like you go to these shows and it's like family, because it's like, you know, everyone there, you know, all the wrestlers, you know, all the characters. You go with your friends, and your friend, it's like you said, it's a safe space. So you can go there and be a fan and just enjoy yourselves and not have to worry about people making fun of you, like, you know, you're into wrestling, and you know what I mean. So I'm trying to think here. What's another way that I would describe it? It's like the fans, I would say, because like even like the first show, I remember after the first show, and then going into like, you know, the. You know, the Facebook group, and like everyone was putting it over, like, oh, it was the best time of my life, I had a great time. And I was like, oh crap, like, I'm glad everyone else enjoyed it as much as I did. And they would have, they already knew who the people were, and like they were like, oh, this was my character I really liked, and that was my character. And I mean, from day one, I was like, yeah, Ken Warren, that's the guy right there. Like, that's your shot right there. That's, you know what I mean? Put this guy out front. He's the man. But yeah, I would say, like, I've been to shows, like small indie shows in America where the crowd is really not into it. It's, you know, the guys, you know, just there's not enough passion. They may look good, they may be in shape, but the passion's not there. Yeah, but I would say that it's really the fans, like the way that they, the passion and just the enthusiasm.
Yeah, I like how you relate the sense of community to the fans over here.
Yeah,
because being that, you know, I've seen actually wrestling fans and non-fans watch PWR shows and both have the same level of enjoyment that otherwise wouldn't have been possible outside of a PWR show.
Mm.
You know, the level of enjoyment, the pretensions that go out the door as soon as you enter MCS or even the Power Mac Spotlight now, it's incredible. It's incredibly welcoming.
Mm-hmm. No, I actually want to ask you this, because like you just talked about the these indie shows in the U.S. where there isn't as much passion from the fans, or like you feel like the energy isn't up there. Like, whose fault is that? Is that the fault of the fans because like they didn't seem to be into what they were watching? Is it the promoter's fault? Is it the talent's fault?
Because I think a lot of these smaller shows, because I used to go to a lot of like really small shows in New Jersey, and you know, it's just like, when you think of like, not like how there's like the indies now, it's like where it's like the cool indies and everyone's having, you know, it's like it's hip to be in the indies. It's like, I'm talking like the fake doink shows, you know what I
right.
mean?
Right, yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
You get like, you know, the fake Vader or something like that, like, and like, actually I remember the one show I saw, like the fake Boss Man, and like you're clearly just dressed up as Big Boss Man, and you know.
And Boss Man's been dead for a while.
Yeah, and he was doing like, you know, they were doing like the Vince McMahon, you know, angle, but it's like, I heard that they'd done that before, like, you know, last week too. You know what I mean? It was like that kind of thing, which like, they're clearly just trying to work on like getting something to bigger, but it's like that show didn't really matter as much. Like, I think the fans can sense where it's like a practice show, you know what I mean? So I've gone to a few practice shows, and it's just I guess it just also matters about like sometimes like I think PWR just has a young, fun crowd, hip crowd. Like it's just all the coolest people in Manila go to the PWR shows. That's really what it feels like, because it's like I'm looking around, there's no hint of being self-conscious. It's just everyone's having a blast, and it's like, yeah, we're wrestling fans, deal with it.
Yeah. Like that pretty much sums up the feeling of being a fan. I mean, like, I haven't been a fan at a local show for quite some time, but like, if I weren't part of the locker room, I'd probably feel the same way. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how it is on your end, Chino, since you're not part of the locker
room. No, I am a fan of all the shows. That's why I keep coming to support, not just to review and to talk about it on this podcast. Sure, there's that, but as a fan of a wrestling promotion that's homegrown with people that I know who are involved with it, It's just endearing to me to be able to go all the way out there and just enjoy my Sunday afternoon.
And there's nothing toxic about it too. That's the best thing. Cause like, you know, you can get something special going, and then there can be an element that just ruins it for some people, and that doesn't exist here. That's what I really liked also about it. Cause like when you use the term safe space, I know that's something that, you know, kind of gets like scoffed at and like social media and stuff like that. But it really is like that, where it's like, you know, these are a lot of fans probably like get that. Even I get like, oh, you know, it's fake. I'm like, no, really, it's fake. I had no idea. Thanks for letting me know, you asshole. Like, and I've actually had to block people from my Facebook page. I'm like, oh, you think you're so witty? Like, you know, you know something smart, huh? Like, but like, these are people like who probably have heard that from like family members or friends or yep. something like that. And
coworkers,
yeah. Like, at least my mom is really cool when it comes to wrestling. Like, my mom like loves wrestling too. Like, she was like the first person who like let me watch wrestling. And I remember like when I was like in like first grade or kindergarten, I remember like it was like summer vacation. Yeah, I get to stay up and watch Raw now, because Raw had just like gone on the air at that time. Even my wife, believe it or not, my wife is a big wrestling fan. When she was a kid, like, she was a big fan of Ultimate Warrior. So she like would like do the ropes, like shaking the ropes, like looking back. And everyone, I feel like, has had a point where they got into wrestling. You know, it's just something that like it's always been with me, and for a lot of the people, like, it's almost like their inner child still alive, you know.
What's the best clap back you've given to someone who's made fun of your fandom?
Blocking them, I usually don't even like sit around and like, you know, I'll have this conversation, like, but it's like, because, you know, I feel like it's always a bad faith like thing to say. It's just like, yeah, of course I know it's fake, you know what I mean, or it's scripted, but you know what, it's I'm having a good time. Like, you know what, TV shows, movies, they're scripted too. Like, you know, I hate to tell you, you know, Captain America really didn't like beat that guy, you know what I mean? That guy put him over, you know. That's just how it was, you know. It's you know what I'm saying? Unless we're watching boxing or MMA or something like that, like even reality TV is scripted. So at least wrestling can keep a sense of humor about itself.
Right. As we wind down here, what do you miss most since you left the Philippines and since you left all of this?
Oh, you know.
And what's your favorite Filipino food?
Oh yeah. Well, obviously it's balut. You know. No, you know what? I'll tell you what I miss about the Philippines. I miss everything. I can't say this enough. Like, Manila is always going to be home to me. I miss the people. I miss my friends. Unfortunately, the way, like, when I had to leave, like, I didn't get a chance to say goodbye to everyone. But luckily, I was able to see a lot of the people. I just miss the way, like, people here, not to juxtapose them with anyone else, but it's like in the Philippines, people really know how to live. And even if like there's traffic or whatever and all this stuff that sucks our souls out, it's like people, they don't, I feel like they don't lose track of what's important here. Like, you know, the way that sometimes, you know, it's possible to do in America. I missed all my friends. I missed all my friends at Rappler. You know, I was able to come by and see them all today and just catch up with them. And I planted a lot of seeds at Rappler when I was there, and to see a lot of the people that I worked with and some of the people I hired out of college actually still there and living the dream and being their best selves, that meant a lot to me. You know, I'm actually leaving on Monday, but it's just I feel like you know, part of me wants to stay because I'm like, I mean, obviously, you know, I can't go to school online or I have to be there,
right?
But I don't know. I'm not ruling it out that I'll be back here one day again.
And I guess to just end it all off on something positive. You know, you're someone who's achieved a lot in your field. Even though, you know, dating back to our first interview, you said that you had a lot of hurdles that you had to overcome. So, yeah. Like, what's the biggest thing that if you're behind the eight ball and you want to achieve something, whether it's in journalism or wrestling or whatever other industry you're in, like, what's that one thing that has to drive you to like push through?
It, you know, it really comes down to the person just wanting it. Like, I mean, I shouldn't be where I am. I shouldn't be alive. A lot of things, you know, that I've had to go through. But it's just like I remember as a kid, I was bullied a lot as a kid, and I remember thinking to myself, you know what, I can't do anything about it right now. But one of these days, you know, I'm gonna do something in my life. And I just remember like that's not currency at that point when you're 15 years old, and you can't tell a teacher that because the teacher's like, who are you? I have a car. Go to hell. You know what I mean? Or like. You know what I'm saying? Or like, or a bigger kid. Like, yeah, maybe one day, but I can kick your ass now. But it's all good because, like, I would just say it's like never giving up. Like having that belief in yourself that there's something that you can do, and also it's just about enjoying yourself. It's like I started writing because I really enjoyed it, and I never thought, oh, I was gonna make a career out of this. I'm gonna see the world because of this, and I was able to do those things. But it's like just staying positive about it. Every day work, because there's a boxer by the name of Bernard Hopkins who said every day you know you have to do something towards your goal of being. He was talking about becoming a world champion, but for me it was like, you know, being a writer. It was like I write every day, I read every day. I put myself in that mindset. I you know, all the writers that I would love, I wanted to be like. I remember Hunter Thompson, who was like one of my favorite writers. He, when he was a little kid, he would type out Ernest Hemingway books. You know, just like sitting there, like, you know, imagining that he was actually writing, you know, Farewell to Arms, or I forget which book it was. And you have to put yourself in that mindset that whatever you want to be, you have to imagine yourself already as that. And I kind of fake it till I make it. So anyone who's listening to this, you know, first off, I apologize for my voice and my accent. But secondly, I just want to say if you're someone who has a dream, don't give up on it, and don't ever let anyone tell you. So I want to end this on this quote, because I messed this up when I said this at Carnegie Hall, because I was a little tipsy when I was accepting an award one night. But it was from that movie, 10 Things I Hate About You.
Uh-huh.
So Heath Ledger, you know, and he was giving advice to Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character when, you know, because he liked this girl. And like, you know, he was kind of like this reticent bully, but then it turns out he's like a benevolent figure. So he tells Joseph Gordon-Levitt, don't ever let anyone make you feel like you don't deserve what you want. You know what I mean? And I feel like if you keep that mindset, you can do what you want to do.
Wow. That's powerful stuff.
Ending on some Shakespeare.
Right?
Yeah.
So if people want to follow you, keep tabs on your work, where can people find it?
I'm on Twitter at Ryan Sungalia, Instagram as well. Follow me there. I write for Ring Magazine. If you're into boxing, if you want to read old stuff, you can just search my stuff at Rappler. I'll be doing stuff. Who knows?
Ryan, thank you so much for making time for us. I know that the trip isn't as long as either of us would like to be, but you know, you were there last Sunday at the Wrestle Kingdom viewing party, and now you're here.
I wouldn't have missed it.
Appreciate you being back after 4 or 5 years here on the podcast.
Thank you very much for having me on.
Thanks, brother. Thanks again to Ryan Sungalia for joining us here on the Wrestling Podcast and just talking about some good times, and also giving us that perspective of an outsider that we don't normally get on all things Philippine wrestling.
I really wish he could have made this show, because like he hasn't seen us in a long time, like live. He hasn't seen us live, but I'm just so happy that he gave so much feedback on the current product.
Right, absolutely. And if you want to get to catch a local show yourself and also give your feedback on the local product, all you have to do is to be there for PWR Mabuhay Ang Wrestling. That's taking place on Sunday, January 26th at 2 p.m. at the PowerMax Center Spotlight. You've already got a couple announced matches. You've got Chris Panzer defending his championship the Campeonato ng Pilipinas, or you know, pagiging kampeon ng Pilipinas, right? It's up for grabs against Cuatro and Ken Warren. You've also got just announced today, Jake De Leon taking on Jay Serra.
Jay versus Jay.
As JDL fulfills his destiny of being Joshi De Leon.
Well, he wants it.
Yeah. You've also got...
It's his first intergender match.
Ever. Right. And you've got MSG taking on the Kakai Bros for the PWR Tag Team Championships as we fulfill our destiny of being MSG All Belts.
Uh-huh.
You've got Chino Ginto and Vlad Sincic in a Matira Matibay match for the Philippine Excellence Championship.
Which should be brutal.
And many other matches that will be announced in the coming week. So
I'm excited.
You know where to get your tickets, ticket2me.net, or just message the PWR page.
Usual ways, usual channels. It's 2020, but we still using everything that worked in 2019 to get you guys the best Philippine wrestling tickets available. Right.
So there's that. Then the very next day, you've got the Royal Rumble viewing party. We are doing this for the fifth straight year.
Oh, my God.
5 a.m. Nandun na kami at Skinny Mike's. No reservation. So it's first come, first serve. Tickets are at 300 pesos a pop. They come with a free drink. Yeah, book your leaves. They come with a free drink. So it's your choice between a beer, a juice, an iced tea, or a soda. Right?
And you know what, guys? I tell you this. If you really, 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 really love the Rumble, there are ways that we're going to make this viewing party fun. We've always had fun at these shows with all the shenanigans that we pull up. We had a drinking game last year, where I can't remember who bought the bottle of tequila.
Yeah, you know, these Rumble but viewing parties are the best.
These Rumble viewing parties are the best. And, you know, if there's one WWE show that you really love to watch, it has to be the Rumble, just because there's so much unpredictability. There's so much fun that can happen there.
Not just that, the sensation of counting down from 10 to 1 with an entire bar of wrestling fans on a Monday morning.
On a Monday morning while you're still hungover from the wrestling show the night before.
Yeah, that's insane. So it's something definitely worth looking forward to on the weekend of January 26.
They have announced Daniel Bryan versus The Fiend at the very least, no?
Yeah, they have announced that. They've also announced like a handful of competitors for the Royal Rumble match. Yeah. So there.
It's going to be an exciting Rumble weekend. I have a good feeling about this year.
Now, before we end this week's episode of the podcast, we have to give you our picks of the week. And let's start with the pick of the week for Chino, who just left because he has an open mic to attend tonight.
Oh yeah, he still does that. And you know what, guys? Please do head out to these Comedy Manila open mics at Mo's Bar, our favorite Chinese restaurant bar. Favorite bar underneath a Chinese restaurant in Quezon City.
So his pick of the week is Chris Jericho versus Hiroshi Tanahashi, where if Tanahashi would have won, he would have been eligible for an AEW world title shot. And so obviously that didn't happen.
That didn't happen. But it's a good idea to put it out that the quote-unquote forbidden door
could have been open. Yeah, I love that. The universes could have merged together. That's always great. And at the very least, we got a great match from two guys who are way over 40.
And Jericho looks way, way, way closer to 50 than he does.
I mean, he's 49. He just turned 49 at the end of November, I believe. And, yeah, you know, I mean, he talks about DDPY a lot. So
if it works for him with that body type, God bless you, DDP.
Yeah, God bless you, Chris Jericho.
No, DDP, because he's able to make sure that that man with that frame
continues to perform
at the peak of his abilities. And sure. Just a snippet from this match. Na in the post show press con that they always do, Jericho goes on to say, "Na hey, I want AEW and NJPW to work together. I want this door to be opened and for people to challenge from Japan."
See, it's still very much unclear whether or not the beef between AEW and NJPW is actually legit.
Or if this is still a fucking work!
Right, so, you know, as a fan, I just want it to be a work. I want these two universes to blend once again. I'd like to see the likes of Okada, Naito, Tanahashi in AEW the same way I'd love to see the Elite get back into NJPW.
All we need from this is for Kenny to come back and save Ibushi this time around.
Let's get another Golden Lovers reunion going.
All you need to happen is that, and the door will be wide, wide, wide open. So, Stan, what was your pick from this week?
All right, my pick of the week is ZSJ versus Sanada. Since I know you're picking the main event, I enjoy the counters. I, too, am a fan of ZSJ. And, I mean, counter wrestling isn't for everybody.
But when it's done properly.
When it's done really well, it's just such a beauty to watch. It's so fun. And watching it on a Sunday afternoon with a red horse in your hand and watching these two guys just counter the fuck out of each other's holds and locks and pinning combinations. Sobrang nakakatuwa siya. It was a good display of athleticism and finesse.
Can I point out just one sequence from that match that everyone needs to watch? The straight jacket sequence.
Yeah.
That sequence of
slipping out and then flipping. And then just trying to outmaneuver one another.
All with one of the more complicated holds that, you know, you can get creative with, but oh my God.
Sobrang slippery ni Zack Sabre Jr. Putang, like when he literally slipped under from that straitjacket. Oh God, that was such a joy to
watch.
Got
you hard.
Well, yes, figuratively. So there, that's my pick. All right, cry about the main event for a minute, Camus.
No, I would have picked the Liger ceremony on any other occasion, but sure. The main event of Wrestle Kingdom Night 2 is my pick of the week just because, holy shit, they finally pulled the trigger.
Right.
That in itself is warranting a moment. The match is a marathon in the way that all Wrestle Kingdom finales should be and have been for the better part of, I don't know, ever.
Yeah.
So it's a hard watch.
It's hard to watch, especially through the first, I would say, 20, 25 minutes. Like,
but when it picks up.
When it picks up, it picks up.
Because there is one sequence that our good friend Tengu and I have jizzed over, and that is the Poison Rana from the top.
Yeah.
That Poison Rana, that really, really crunchy Poison Rana where Okada's neck visibly goes...
And just makes you go, what the fuck are these guys on?
Because Kenny did it to Okada already. And it was already freaking... you'd freak out over that shit.
Yeah.
But when Naito pulls it, it's like, fucking hell. It's so much crunchier. Like, I have no words for this main event. Nah, I thought when I saw Kenny Omega versus Okada 1, that was going to be the best. This surpassed that. Ever so slightly.
I feel like matches like these... are best enjoyed with other people around you.
Oh yeah, you can't. It's like if you watch it,
you can enjoy it alone. You know, if that's your thing, good for you. Pero pag may kasama ka and you can just enjoy it together, it would be so much sweeter. So there, those are our picks of the week.
I wish Ro had a pick from Wrestle Kingdom weekend.
I'm sure he would have had.
He would have had a good one. But guys, do yourselves a favor if you want to watch anything else from the weekend. The junior stuff is great. The junior tag stuff is great. The Liger stuff is nice to watch. One last hurrah. So there is so much from Wrestle Kingdom weekend to watch if you feel like it, if you have the time. It could take you about two, three weeks just to digest everything. But those picks that we gave you are the highlights that we feel you absolutely must watch.
All right, there you have it. That pretty much brings our latest episode to a close, episode number 311. Thank you so much for sticking with us through all this time. Thank you again to Ryan Songalia for joining us and for sharing his time with us as well. And thank you, dear listener, for continuing to subscribe, download, leaving us the 5-star rating, sharing us on social media. All these things, they really go a long way towards helping keep the podcast alive. And do us a favor as well and show some love to all the other shows on Podcast Network Asia, from the Cool Pals, who were just next door recording
their episode for this week
before they went out on their open mic session with Jokoy, of all people. They've got Jokoy at their open mic tonight.
I know.
So,
do you want to drive over?
We'll think about it. So you've got the Cool Pals. You've also got the Halo Halo Show. You've got Hustle Share, the Eavesdrop, everything in between, Generation Gap. You've got new shows like Two-Niner Rider.
Yeah.
You've got OG shows like the Kudazzers.
You have, what's his name? His fucking name escapes me. The Economic Show with
Enchong D,
the
budgetarian.
Budgetarian.
Yeah, how could you forget Enchong D of all people?
Yeah.
So you have this slate of programs here on Podcast Network Asia that you can check out. And if you love what you see, please don't be shy. Hit subscribe, hit download, and leave us a 5-star rating and leave a comment and use the power of social media to tell everybody about the good work that Podcast Network Asia does. All right. If you have anything you want to say or add to whatever conversation we have had on the podcast, it's easy to hit us up. It is at Wrestling2XPod on Twitter, at Wrestling Wrestling Podcast on Instagram and on Facebook. And you can message us individually as well. For me, it's at _StanC, at Caveman Camus, at Rose War, and at Chino Supersize. So on behalf of all my co-hosts, and on behalf of Babyface producer Ryan and Val and the rest of the Podcast Network Asia family, my name is Stan C, saying thank you very much. Episode number 311 in the books, and we are out of here.
Peace, brothers.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.